The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder in rock and roll. And today, my former best friend, Kevin Owens, and his new best friend, Sami Zayn, have both returned to Talk is Jericho. This time they are together. So, of course, we're going to talk about the new WWE tag team, why they don't have a fancy name, maybe even come up with one for them. They travel together as well. They got some great road stories about interactions with fans and gas station stops. They're also talking about their early days on the Canadian indie wrestling scene and how they ended up in a three-way tag match with Kenny Omega. They've got WWE locker room stories about crazy ping pong matches, and they're talking about the Hell in the Cell match with Shane McMahon and what really went down into pulling that off properly. It was a matter of seconds. Someone could have died, and Sammy will tell you all about that. And if you want to know about KO headbutting Vince McMahon and how that happened, we're going to get into that as well. So we're going to talk to Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn right now.
In the middle of a secret meeting place here at the Tampa Arena, it's Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, which is really funny because, like I said, I had no idea you guys were here, and somebody told me a couple days ago that you're here, so I asked if we could do this.
But somebody being the radio.
The radio, yes, somebody on the radio.
But you weren't supposed to say that.
But I didn't want to be one of those guys like Knobs always shows up in Tampa, you know, and it's like, hey, guys, what are you doing? That hangs around. Like, I don't want to say hi.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I wanted to kind of do it in a secret place, but it's pretty secret.
Very secretive. I couldn't believe the walk we did here.
I didn't know this part of the arena existed.
Yeah, this is kind of the real other side of the office.
I don't think we're
offices.
Technically in Tampa anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's the reason why, because I was like, I don't want anyone to know I'm here. I have no idea. You know, because I always hated those guys that would just show up looking for just one more run.
Yeah, but this is your... It's your locker room. It's not like it's 20 years later
and you're
the old guy. You were here a couple months ago.
I know. You know. I should probably go say hi to people.
But maybe. It is time consuming as well.
It is.
I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I see. I wouldn't have even shown up if it wasn't for you guys having to be here.
I have nothing interesting to say though. Either. You know?
What's that?
I have nothing interesting to say. Hey, good. How are you? Good. You? Good.
Yeah, so how's your match going?
See you later.
You know what I mean?
Also, I heard you're doing New Japan.
Yeah.
That's what you're going
to
get.
So it's, you know,
same conversation times.
Are you in the Royal Rumble?
I think if we found when you are in this business, the last thing you want to do when you're off is go hang around the business or watch wrestling or that sort of thing.
Well, so here's where we differ. Mm-hmm. Okay, because as some people may know by now, you know, there are certain differences in our personalities.
Yes, sure, right? Sure.
But so I am very much of that mindset. But Kevin can be around wrestling all the time. When I'm out, I'm out. Like, I like to detach. I like to unplug. And once I'm away from it, I'm away from it. Whereas Kevin, I think, like, on his days off, he would still go to NXT. He likes being around
it. Yeah, I mean, like, I went to an NXT TV taping the other day just – because it was happening, and you know, I live in Orlando now, and it was great. And I just come off the road, but I was really happy to be there. I just like being around wrestling a lot, you know. If my wife and kids are busy and there's a wrestling show around, I'm definitely gonna
go.
Yeah, like even this summer when I was kind of like we were about to move, but I was gonna come out here on a Thursday before we move just to kind of get things settled in before, you know, my wife and the kids get here. So I couldn't come because something came up at the last minute, and I actually didn't end up coming to Orlando at all that week. But I had already figured out that it was going to be maybe Thursday or maybe even Friday. There was an NXT show that night in like Fort Pierce or something like that. And I had already told Matt Bloom, I had talked to Hunter, I'll show up at the NXT show and I'll do something with Johnny Gargano. So it was all planned. And then, you know, that morning I had to tell Bloom I couldn't make it because something happened. I think my daughter was sick maybe, so I had to stay home. But, you know, I was going to come here, do everything I need to do, run all my errands for the apartment, and then drive.
And Fort Pierce is a drive from Orlando. That's not next door.
I was going to drive 3 hours over there to do the show.
And, to do what? Like do a promo or something?
Yeah, I was going
to
do a promo. I think what we had planned is Gargano was going to have a match and then start talking about what Tommaso Ciampa did to him, about his friend turning on him. And then I was going to come out and say, well, Tommaso Ciampa knows what to do, you know? That's what Then I think, I don't know, Gargano and I were going to get into a little scuffle, but it was just something. A
cool little treat for the fans of that show.
It's funny because you just mentioned Kenny Omega. I know, like, when he does, obviously, the Tokyo Dome or headlines the Sumo Arena, and they'll go wrestle at, like, you know, Dave's Fun Palace in Winnipeg in front of 150 people.
Well, I've wrestled them. It wasn't called Dave's Fun Palace, but what's the, maybe you know it. It was a
Bumpers was in Winnipeg.
Remember Dylan the, something?
Oh, the a bar in Winnipeg?
It's a bar.
Yeah Winnipeg's famous for bar wrestling.
Dylan Miley's bar?
No, it's not, I'm pretty sure it's not Dylan Miley, aka Dylan. Lars Sullivan's bar, current NXT superstar.
Is that his real name?
Yeah.
Okay, that's where that came from. But it was like some Dylan's pub on Winnipeg Boulevard or whatever.
Time,
you know,
that's
like,
the only time I wrestled in Winnipeg on the Indies.
We teamed.
Yeah, do you remember the circumstances around that show?
No, vaguely. His memory is also a lot better.
I knew I wouldn't have to plan a thing, just let you guys go.
Another difference between us is his memory is way better.
We got there in the afternoon. We were driven to the hotel.
I watched the Toronto Canadiens game.
Yeah, I went in the hot tub while he's watching the game, and it's 7:30. The game's starting. Still no word from the promoter as to when he's picking us up for the show. By 9:30, we're still in the hotel room.
I watched the entire game.
Yeah. We got picked up, 10:15? Got driven to the building. The show started at 11 p.m.
Really?
But it wasn't supposed... The show was supposed to start at 9.
Mm-hmm.
The guy just said, this is kind of how we do things here. Show started at 11. Fans are still there. Know.
Show starts when it starts.
By the time we got in the ring, it must have been, 11? What am I saying? 1 a.m.
1 a.m.
Probably. Yeah. Kenny Omega was actually in that match,
in that
too.
Match, but I don't remember anything
It was a four-way tag team
Did
match.
You throw a shoe or something like that?
I mean, I've done that countless times throughout my career, but I do remember you and I being on the same team in one corner, Kenny and his partner being in the opposite corner.
Was it a three-way tag, maybe?
It was a three-way or four-way tag, and at one point, two of the wrestlers that weren't you, me, or Kenny were in the ring performing some just fantastic professional wrestling.
Sure, right?
And we looked across the ring at Kenny, and we all just locked eyes and just died from across the ring. Just really, but it was a really fun time. So, and then we were never brought back, sadly.
You guys killed the town.
I think I might have been back once before or after then. I don't remember.
You went before me once.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that actually reminds me, so when you talk about bad wrestling, we were watching...
I think it was great wrestling.
No. But I'm talking about our appreciation for bad wrestling, as I'm sure you are, because
I love it.
But you've been wrestling for so long. Like, I mean, it has to be either really, really great for you to appreciate it at this point, or really terrible.
Exactly.
Like, because everything else you've seen a million times, right?
A middle of the road good match doesn't do it for me anymore.
So we were driving. We're doing one of these long drives. This is the holiday loop, and it was a rough one this year. A lot of drives.
Like, this year?
The one we just... Yeah.
The one you're on right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was like...
Talking about last night, actually.
What?
Yeah.
It was last night?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not right. Where were you guys last night?
I don't remember. Ago.
Hershey,
Pennsylvania. Isn't it the crazy thing you honestly... And people go, come on. You honestly don't remember where you were.
Countless times I get
because
to the...
Because Canada,
when you
get
back to Montreal, you have to go through immigration.
Yeah.
The first question they ask, where are you coming from?
It takes me a second, and they think...
And you start with, this guy thinks I'm guilty. He thinks I'm foolish.
Who is this drifter just coming to Canada? You know? And then I'll remember... I won't remember the town, but I'll remember the flight.
Yeah.
Oh, I just flew in from Charlotte. Okay, but were you in Charlotte?
No.
Yeah. Okay, where were you?
Here's another good one before you tell your story. When you go to the front desk and go, can you please tell me what room I'm in? Because I have no idea. They're like, you don't know what room you're in? It's like, nope, no idea.
I remember yesterday's room.
Yeah, right. I mean,
3:10.
There is no 4:10.
That was yesterday.
So you guys were in Hershey yesterday, and what were you guys doing?
So, well, on one of those long drives, and maybe we shouldn't be doing this, but sometimes we do, we put on like whatever to watch, like
Raw or some wrestling
or something, right? So we put on, I have no idea why. Why do we choose this particular event?
I chose it. I know why.
Because for some reason, okay, so one of the rules of our car, unspoken rule, is driver picks the music. Okay. So I was playing my music, which he's not necessarily in love with.
What were you playing?
Oh, I don't know.
Operation Ivy?
Probably Operation Ivy, because I just met Jesse Michaels, the singer, the other day.
Instagram.
So I was on a big kick. And so then Kevin took the wheel, and he chose some, like, WWF the music.
Volume. He really is obsessed with wrestling.
Right. You see, I would never do that. But so, and actually, this is just a funny, I probably won't even tell the story funny, but we get to this gas station not far from the building, and this really strange demo version.
Maybe 5 minutes. So we were listening to the music on our way to the building. We get to the building. we get back in the car after the show, and I had my son with me, uh-huh. which is crucial to this bit of the story. We get back in the car, so we have to drive from Hershey to Philly. By the time we got in the car, the show had just ended, so everyone was driving out. We drove about 5 minutes to a gas station, and we pull up to the pumps, and as soon as we sat back in the car, my phone reconnected to the Bluetooth, and it picked up right where we had left off, back to the WWE themes. And it was on Apple
demo version.
Yeah, it was on Apple Music. So it just kind of, you know, all the WWE songs that are on the database, whatever you want to call it, are playing. And it's some stuff that we've never heard.
Yeah.
And as we're driving to the gas station, it's the King of Kings, Triple H's music, but it's a very strange demo version that's kind of acoustic, but not really. And it's not Motorhead singing it. Might have been Jim Johnson or whoever would sing this.
Really?
It was really weird sounding. And we started getting a kick out of it because of how strange it was. But then we pulled over into the gas station, and my son's like, oh, my chocolate milk's leaking in the back seat. So I pull over, I open the door, and I walk around, but I leave my door open.
The music's playing.
The music's still playing. I open my son's door. He steps out. I start wiping the seat, whatever. Sammy walks out, starts walking around the car to put gas. And then I notice the guys at the pump next to us are just
I'm singing the song, mind you. And it turns out I didn't know the lyrics. All this time I thought it was, bow down to the game. But it's not. It's the king.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's what it is. It's the song. It's called Bow Down to the King.
I would say Bow Down to the King for you. Bow Down to the Game.
That's what it's called.
I'm singing Triple H's theme song incorrectly.
So then he's cleaning his chastising milk as we're getting out of the car. Because it's also funny because as we're driving to the building before that, he doesn't know any songs. He didn't know Diesel's theme song. He didn't. What is the song? It's Diesel's theme song. I've never heard this in my life.
You don't like wrestling.
You're not a wrestling fan.
I go, listen, we didn't even have cable growing up.
I'm lucky I caught
any of this.
Oh, no.
Anyway. 95, 96, that was a blur for me, man.
The point is, I look over and I see the guys, clearly, they know who we are. They were just at the show. They're just staring at us. And then, whatever, I go inside, I buy my things, I get back in the car. As I get in, the guy goes, hey, are you Kevin Owens? And I say, sometimes, close the door, drive off.
Yeah.
Which is actually a very appropriate answer.
It's a great answer.
The truth.
He's only sometimes.
And as we're driving away, Kevin Owens. We start analyzing what these guys just saw. It's like, hey, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn were arguing over a really weird version of Triple H's theme song at the gas station.
But that is a good answer, though. Like, are you a wrestler sometimes?
Well, so I picked this up from Kevin, actually.
But your real name really is Kevin Owens.
But if they say...
Oh, okay. Kevin Steen.
Kevin Steen, right, right. That's what, yeah.
So Kevin won't... If somebody says... Kevin Owens, my God, I'm a huge fan. Can I get a picture? And this at a gas station or something. He'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but one thing he doesn't do is he doesn't play this game. Yeah. The song and dance.
Has anyone ever told you what you look like?
Yeah. He doesn't. No. He won't.
Kevin Owens, like, huh? You ever heard that? Yeah. You know, if you don't have the balls to say, hey, you're Kevin Owens.
Well, he won't take the picture. I mean?
That's what Paul Stanley says.
I will if they ask.
But they never end up
asking. But I'm not going to make them
I was telling Paul Stanley about this. Yeah. He goes, I'm not going to play this. I'm not going to play f***ing games.
Yeah.
You know who I am? I'll be happy to. If not, like, you know who you look like?
Right.
I don't know. Yeah. Bill Clinton? Your Auntie Griselda? I don't know. Who do I look like? You tell me.
Or I get a lot of it's like, you know who you look like? Does anybody ever tell you you look like Kevin Owens? Yep, all the time.
Yeah, and he leaves.
That's it.
He just leaves because they don't follow up,
I'll gladly stick around.
Okay, so check this one. This just happened 2 days ago. I was at the grocery store, and the lady behind the counter goes, do you ever watch wrestling? I'm like, oh, here it comes. Yeah. Yes, I do. Do you know who you look like? Who? Edge. I'm like, oh. She goes, are you Edge? I'm like, no, I'm not Edge.
I was just thinking of it.
And she's like, are you Edge? I'm like, I'm not Edge. She's like, I know you Edge. I'm not Edge. So afterwards, I'm outside, and the lady who was behind me goes, listen, you should have just admitted that you were Edge. She said, I'm not Edge. I am not Edge.
Yeah.
I told Adam that, and Adam's like, yeah, I know they're going to think Edge is a real asshole.
Yeah. Are you thinking of Iceland? Is that what you were thinking of?
Yeah.
So I have a story that's kind of similar to that, but not entirely, but I guess it's worth telling. So I went to Iceland recently on vacation, just between.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, awesome. Beautiful, beautiful country. Everyone should go there at one point in their life, I think. And I go to this area. It's like an hour hike through the most picturesque, beautiful mountains, and you get to the top, and there's natural hot springs and everything, and the water runs through. It's unbelievable. It's like being on the moon. But so I get to the bottom, and who would be parking at the exact same time as me? Aaron Paul. You know, from Breaking Bad.
Yes.
Right? He's done stuff with WWE. So I go and I introduce him. I go, excuse me, are you Aaron Paul? He goes, yeah, I am. I go, oh, hey, man, you know, good to meet you. Hey, I'm actually a wrestler with WWE. You did some stuff with us not long ago. He's like, oh, I loved it, whatever. So we kind of accidentally end up on this hike together in Iceland. And like, not, you know, I didn't want to like be next to him the whole time, but we'd kind of like, he'd be ahead and we'd be ahead and whatever. And then, you know, and then... he's getting recognized tons, like tons. It's crazy. I don't get recognized at all, which is fine. It's fine. Right. I want to enjoy my hike. Then after the whole thing is done, it's probably like 3 hours, the whole thing. We actually end up kind of bumping into each other again on the way back down. So we're having this conversation right at the bottom of the hill, and he gets recognized yet again. And this guy goes, you're all, oh, and he's pointing to Aaron Paul. He goes, you're all, and then he sees me, he goes, oh, oh. So now he's pointing at both of us like he can't believe these two worlds are colliding. Right. One of his favorite actors, one of his favorite wrestlers. What are you guys doing here? How do you know each other? He's so excited. He's like, oh my God, do you mind if I get a picture? And this Aaron Paul, totally like class act, so nice the whole time. No matter how many people were bothering him, he was so nice the whole time. No matter if I get a picture, yeah, absolutely, man, come on over. So the guy puts his arm around Aaron Paul, a big excited grin, puts his arm around me. He's like, Zack Ryder, right? Dude, I died laughing, and I couldn't wait to tell Zach. And when I told Zach the story, he was like wondering, why are you telling me the story about a hiking trip in Iceland? And when I hit him with that punchline, the payoff, oh man, what a pop. But
people get confused though. They get nervous and excited, you know what I mean? And that's why that happens, because I'm sure he's thinking Sami Zayn, but his head is not allowing that to happen.
Maybe,
you know? Yeah. You know, you get that sort of thing. So
I don't know, but I feel like if I saw, you know, I don't know, like Billy Joe Armstrong or something from Green Day.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be like Gerard Way, right? My Chemical Romance. Like, you know what I mean?
But I mean, you don't look anything like Zack Ryder, though.
I got a beard. He's got short hair.
You get the big Arabic nose, though.
Yeah, I got a...
If Sammy didn't have a shirt on, the guy would have known right away. That's not Zack Ryder.
There's no need for that on this podcast.
You got hit with a double whammy
yeah,
there.
Yeah. Your nose is huge. Oh, and you're not nearly as muscular.
So go back to talking about this horrible wrestling that you're watching, or the bad wrestling.
Oh, Survivor. Oh, so somehow listening to WWF, the music.
Here's the thing. I disagree with him that it was bad.
It was atrocious.
I don't feel the same way. I just think it was way different than what we're used to doing, because we work for this company now. We know how things are. We know the rules. We know the way that
the business has evolved a lot in 20 years
and the matches. But we were watching Survivor Series 1996. The opening match
it staggers the imagination.
Wild.
Who is it?
It's Phil LaFon and Doug Furness
making their debut
with they're teaming with the Godwins against Leif Cassidy, Marty Jannetty, Owen Hart, and the British Bulldog.
But now, just the on way paper. That's not a bad
match. No.
Here's the thing. It wasn't a bad match, but the execution and just the way everything
the way they're working is like a house show, like a live event. Yeah, it's the Garden on one of the biggest pay-per-views of the year.
But that's how it was.
I was appalled.
It's just so different.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like then you just kind of go out there and just kind of like, yeah.
But did you watch? You watched wrestling at that time.
You know, I was looking through very different goggles. And those goggles change a lot, just like he said, when you work for this company, because now we all just kind of serve Vince, right? So we have our Vince goggles on when we approach matches. So even now when I watch back my old stuff and some guy's punching me and I'm like, God, get your hands up. What are you doing?
Yeah,
you
know
what
I mean?
It looks wrong when you're not doing it that way, because I'm so in this bubble. But when I was in the indies, like, that was my bubble. And when I was watching wrestling as a kid, it was like, I don't know.
See, but I can remember going to house shows when I was a kid, and it was see the British Bulldogs against Valentine and Beefcake, and they didn't do anything. And I remember Winnipeg Arena sitting there, they're not doing anything. Like, they're not even doing a suplex.
This is even as a kid.
As a kid, like, there's nothing happening here.
Right.
I remember Ultimate Warrior versus Andre the Giant. Beat him in a minute. It was 30 seconds. Not even. Hit the ropes, clothesline, splash, 1, 2, 3. And I was like, that's it? That's all you get?
Yeah.
But that's kind of how those guys used to work back in that time frame, right?
You know, my favorite thing of that match is, and he's the one who pointed it out, but Owen Hart eliminates Henry Godwin with a spin kick.
Oh.
One, two, three, kick out at three.
Kick out at three.
You gotta stay strong, brother.
The calling card of the guy who doesn't want a job pre-year 2000.
Well, I'll tell you one thing.
Just lay down.
Even post-2000, watch any match. Any match that JBL lost, he kicks out on three, brother.
Why?
It's a hell of a deal,
no
brother.
Kid, no kid strong. On earth is going... Wow, I mean, he barely had him. He barely. I still like him. That guy barely won. No kid thinks like that. Nobody cares.
Man,
but
I
you.
Never noticed JBL does.
Watch any of his matches, he always kicked out right under three.
Just lose and move on.
But that's not how it was in those days. Like, you guys are mentioning something that is so interesting because for me, starting in '90,
right,
one foot in the past and one foot in the now.
Yeah,
is the business has changed because that's how it was. You never do the job. You gotta look strong, brother. The guys never worked. They never did shit.
Right.
Anything,
but this is what I'm. My question is: did anybody really think you looked stronger because you kicked out a three?
No, I totally.
You know what
agree
I'm saying? It was
that.
Just. I get the thinking behind it. Like you had to protect yourself far more. I totally get that.
Yeah, but
because it was different.
If you're gonna lose, you're gonna lose. But what my point, what your guys are talking about, is how the business changed. So now every house show is a pay per view. You know, like the matches that you're doing on a house show would be a pay-per-view match.
Oh, what a stole 15 years ago. Survivor Series 96. I'll tell you that right now.
But you know, that's just kind of the way that things changed when work rate became, I guess, more valued.
Yeah,
because it's not more important than a character.
No.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I also feel like maybe, you know, it's changed, yes, obviously. But back then, there were probably guys like us watching it and seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
But we were kids,
mm-hmm.
So we didn't see what, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, and it's probably the same thing now. There's probably guys watching us now thinking, like, finding stuff to critique and complain about, but the kids don't care.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
or
sure.
Not even the kids, but just the people that aren't as obsessed with this industry as we are,
right, for example.
Right.
Or aren't looking through the same goggles that we are.
As different as it may be, the way of looking at it is probably the same. It's just done by different people.
Well, it's also like I always say that the three most loyal / hardcore / biggest pain in the ass type of fans are wrestling fans, Star Wars fans, and KISS fans. They're all very similar. They're super obsessed. They love everything, but they hate everything as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, being all three of those mark the boxes, if I watch the original Star Wars, the acting is terrible. It really is. Like, Mark Hamill, that movie's the shit.
Is he really?
Oh, yeah. I want to go to touch and flip power converters. What am I going to do? And you watch it back now, and it's like, you know, when you're a kid and you grew up with it, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the best thing ever. If you take it from now, I bet you there's people watching 1977 going, this is the worst piece of shit ever.
Well, you know, that's the thing about, you know, you have to... Even me trashing Survivor Series 96, it's all context. Like you said, it's time and place. And we might have even discussed this on the last time we did the podcast, but things are good for the time and the place. And even when we did that Beatles podcast together, which I don't think
it's still coming
seen
out.
The light of day.
It's still coming out, yeah.
I really can't wait to hear that back. But like it's magical because it existed in that time and in that place.
Mm.
If you put out Abbey Road today, it's just another album. Like it's pretty great still, I think.
Yeah, of course.
But
it
I mean,
is.
Like it's not revolutionary now. It's not transcendent now. It's not.
It's just part of the course.
Yeah. No, it's still brilliant. I think songwriting and like you know every song is a. With maybe the exception of Sun King, as we discussed. But still, you know what I mean? Time and place is everything.
Let's talk about when you guys started out. I know you've known each other for years, how you've been working with each other all throughout your career. And now you're both at WWE and a tag team. I want to talk about your tag team. But before we do, I got to talk about how I just had a 5-star match with Kenny Omega in New Japan. And you know what I'm going to say. One of the big reasons for that is my workouts with DDP Yoga. Diamond Dallas Page and his DDP Yoga program have made it possible for me to continue wrestling at the highest of levels. People are saying it's the match of my career. 5-star match is rated by Dave Meltzer. Stole the show at the Tokyo Dome as voted on by you. It's also keep me performing at a high level on stage with Fozzy, and it could do the same for you. All you need is the DDPY app to help you live a healthier life. I got the DDPY app on my phone, and in addition to all the DDP yoga workouts, the app tracks your weight, inches lost, even takes pictures so that you can see your flexibility, physiology, and core strength change from month to month. The DDPY app has a Bluetooth heart monitor. It tracks the calories you burn, even accumulates points based on how many workouts you do. Then it lets you redeem those points for prizes. Like I said, I got the DDPY app on my phone. I use it to do DDP yoga wherever I am, hotel rooms, backstage at the venues, on the bus, in my living room. Anywhere I want to do it, I just flip it on and get rocking. There's over 100 workouts, including live workouts every week from the DDP Yoga Performance Center in Smyrna, Georgia. The app has recipes as well to help you eat healthier and motivational Mondays to give you that extra boost when you need it. Dallas has literally thought of everything. And when you start with the beginner program, Dallas himself pops up every week in your app to help you map out your road to success and give you the support you need to own your life. The DDP Yoga DVDs are still available as well. And when you buy the DVDs, you get 3 months free on the DDPY app. And right now, DDP is giving all of you, the sexy beast listeners of Talk is Jericho, 20% off the DVDs and the DDPY app. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Take advantage of the sale. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Change your life. Own your life. Get in the best physical and mental shape you've ever been in. Have the best match of your career at 47 years old like I did. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho and start today.
Talk is Jericho.
Let's talk about this for you guys starting out when you started out, you know, basically right from the beginning of your careers in Montreal. Then you both come to the W at the same time. You work each other. Now you're a tag team. Do you ever think about it like when you guys were ever first starting out, do you ever like think like someday we'll be in the WWE as a tag team? Was that ever a plan?
No, but like everywhere we'd get to, we would kind of set a goal because we literally pretty much got everywhere together at the exact same time except for WWE. Mm-hmm. But like, so, you know, we're working the Canadian or the Quebec independent scene. He was on the independent scene before I was. But once I started, we started getting booked together everywhere and kind of just ended up becoming a tag team out of it wasn't our idea to start teaming.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I would say we started teaming because we didn't really team in Canada. It's once we started
our first time we were a tag team was in the U.S. because a promoter just needed us to be a tag
because
team.
We were
two Canadians.
Yeah,
they were bringing us in. Like you weren't going to bring in just me. You weren't just going to bring him, and we were driving anyways, except California. So may as well if you're bringing them both. Okay, like you know, our names just got linked together very early on when we start punching our way out of Canada.
So we like started wrestling in the U.S. Indies together at the same time. Then we, you know, CZW was the first place we went to, and then PWG we went together, and then you know we even went to. I think you went to Europe like once before me, but then when we got to Europe, like we, you know, part of when I went to Europe for the first time, he was there and stuff like that.
He went to Japan. I went to Japan, but we were always like neck and neck.
It was always very close. And then Ring of Honor happened, and we got there the like same time as well. And I remember Ring of Honor being the first place where we specifically. So
that's where we really became a team.
Yeah, because we were already seen as you know the two guys from Canada everywhere. We were in PWG. But Ring of Honor is the first place that I remember saying we're going to win the tag titles together here. Mm-hmm. That's our goal. And we did.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah. And then...
took a minute.
Yeah, it took a while. But, you know, that was always like the but it's not, you know, we were a tag team from the start. It just took a while to get to the moment. But we were never, you know, we were never off course. It was always we were a tag team and our goal was the tag team titles. And then, you know, eventually, obviously, years later... He got signed by WWE, and it took me 2 years to get signed. So he was there a while before me, and by the time I came, he was already in his own thing. You know, we couldn't be a tag team because he was already – he had a storyline. He has his angle. He was a person that everybody knew in NXT. I was the new guy. Like, but obviously, we were still linked together because the first thing I did on my first night was attack him.
Beat him up, right.
We weren't partners. We started off as rivals. But
even kinda, as rivals, our names are still like he still came in right
with each other. Yeah,
we always knew.
And even when I got called up, it was to feud with him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When he got called to WWE, it was to feud with me. So it's like we've always kind of used each other both as like a measuring stick, but also like pull each other up to the next
The
next goal.
In a way, it was kind of inevitable. And we knew it was going to happen. It might have happened earlier than I thought it would, but you know,
because I was thinking that too. Like for the amount of times you guys worked each other, and as you know, in the company, there's only you know 10 guys you can work with, or it seems that way. Sooner or later, you guys are going to be put together. Yeah. It's like a natural progression, you know. Right. Did you guys have a name when you were in Ring of Honor tag team?
No, never.
No, we never had.
We never had a tag team name.
Oh. Yeah. I don't like having I don't like having tag team. Even when you and I were a tag team, and they would call us like Y2KO or some.
Yeah.
I don't like
Jericho.
Yeah, I don't like names.
Jerichoans.
Yeah, I hate it. I don't like it. I like you know, we're individuals.
We
be partners. I like I even don't like simultaneous entrances. Like I was watching a house show the other. I should probably tell them before I say this.
This
on
won't
the podcast,
come out until you got time
matter.
To tell them.
But I was watching one of the girls' matches the other day, and I noticed the Riot Squad does this little entrance. So they walk down the ramp. They're three completely different individuals. You know,
totally different characters.
It's Ruby. It's Liv Morgan.
It's like a punkish-looking girl, a southern girl, and like a blonde bombshell.
Right. Yeah,
like so three polar opposites
thrown together for no apparent reason.
But it's fine. You know, they're completely different individuals, but they're together for one common goal, whatever that may be. But then they get to the ring. And they all do the same little thing. They put their hands on the apron, and then they look at each other and make sure they're all at the okay, are you guys ready? Then they push each. They push themselves back from the apron, and they slide in the ring at the same time.
Oh, okay.
To me, that's right. When I saw that, I was like, "What? You don't have to do this."
The despair in his voice.
But I was, and it's, you know, I don't understand this.
The exasperation.
Like, be your own person. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, Cesaro and Sheamus, for example, now they're known for their entrance.
Yeah.
But like, man, I don't know how many steps they added to that entrance. Like now we've got the jackets, we got the skirts, we got the thing where
the
you go under and I point at you, you point at me. We do the bar thing with our thumbs. Then we get on the same buckle and it's
back to back with our legs, arms
out. How much thought they put into their entrance, but at least there's still like individuals in it. But you know, like it's like, doing the same thing as the other. Even though you guys look completely different, you're completely different people.
It's different if the Usos do it.
Right.
You know?
Well, yeah, because they're an actual team.
But man, like, you're not robots. Just, it's okay to be your own thing. So it's to me, it's the same thing. Like, having a name, I don't need a name. He's Sami Zayn, I'm Kevin Owens. Yeah, we're friends and we're partners, but you don't have to.
I hate it too. And like when me and Big Show were a team, and they called us Jera Show.
Yeah.
And I always told Show, like, do not never use that in a promo.
What do you mean?
Don't ever say that ever. It's a stupid name. I hate it. We're never calling ourselves Jera Show. Yeah. You know, but the announcers would say it. You know what I mean? But I just didn't like that idea. Yeah. Like you're squeezing it, and it has to be organic, right?
Right, exactly.
Which What if they said you need a name? What are we? What are you? The French Connection, the Quebec.
So the only thing that I've kind of pushed the only thing that I would kind of accept as a team name is the Sammy and Kevin Show, because we've said that on TV.
Oh, right.
Because that's still the Sammy and, like, we're still different.
We're two entities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The two individuals that are stuck together as a team and don't need a name.
Yeah. Two dudes. I like
the
that
two entities. But I mean, are you guys having a good time though as a team?
Yeah. So far so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny to see him, for me. It's funny to see him bust out of his shell, because it's not like he was this reserved introverted character in the first place. Like Sami Zayn, he's always been pretty
charismatic,
right,
and open.
But it's funny to see him turn up the annoying features of his personality.
the heelish.
It's funny for me because I'm kind of just the same. I always am. Mm-hmm. But now I've got this guy bouncing around me, acting extremely, over the top, and just being as annoying as he possibly can be.
I remember when I was younger, like high school or just after high school. CJEP, for you Quebecers, will understand that
CJEP.
One.
CJEP.
Yeah, we don't have our high schools go up to grade 11, and then you do a 2 to 3 year program called CJEP, which is like you get your baccalaureate degree, and then you go to university.
Wow, okay.
So it's sort of between high school and university, CJEP, but it's only in Quebec.
Okay.
So right around that time, you know, me and my friends from my hometown, we would play a lot of like foosball. That was a big thing we would do at night. We'd all just get together, go to the local bar, and play foosball. Me and my friend Arthur Kalamidas.
Is this the same guy?
Of course.
From the music show?
Which music show?
With me, you, and Seth did The Power of Music, wasn't there?
Oh, Arthur
Kalamidas.
Sure.
Shout out to Arthur for the second time.
He comes up all the time, yeah.
He's your Bob Sacramento.
He's very well known in the locker room. No one's ever seen him. Kevin's met him.
You know what Mandy Rose's last name is?
No.
Sacramento.
No.
I'm not joking.
Wow. Yeah. You know my friend Bob Sacramento. That's what, you know.
From Seinfeld. Yeah, George.
Your friend. He's a fictitious character.
But Arthur is
Jim and Malden.
Arthur Kalamidas is sort of that guy for me. Anyway, the only reason I bring it up is because I still channel my character currently, mm-hmm. as a source of inspiration, I remember when we would team, we'd be on one team playing these other teams, and like sometimes these other teams were better than us, mm-hmm. and they deserved to win. But when we would score a goal, we'd just be the most obnoxious, and I would run my mouth.
Chris, you must remember, I think we were in Europe, or where were we? No, we were in China. You must have been with us. When the ping pong game.
Oh, the ping pong tournament.
Oh, yeah.
Played ping pong with Ho Ho Loon.
Ho Ho Loon.
Yeah, dude. You remember how insane he was?
Nobody knew. I got that entire locker room behind Ho Ho Loon. I was like, that's the real me. That's a heel right
poor
there.
Poor guy. Nobody knew who he was.
I didn't know who he was.
They thought he was part of the office. He was in NXT for 7 months.
I thought I was playing. I go,
he was wearing a nice suit, I remember.
I'm like, wow, this guy works Chinese office, but like, it's pretty charismatic. He seems pretty comfortable
in the locker room. Yeah.
Let me set the tone. So we go into China, and there's a big ping pong table in the dressing room. And this was that shitty, crazy, freaking tour
where we flew around the world.
So yeah.
What did we do?
Kansas City to London, London to Philippines, Philippines to China.
Yeah.
And then China to L.A.
China to Detroit to Baltimore.
My God. Literally around planet Earth.
It was 100 out of 120 hours. It was 48 hours in the air. Something like that. 48 hours in the air.
And 5 shows.
Yes.
Including two TVs.
So we get to everyone's off the rocker. We get into the dressing room. There's a big ping pong table in there. Mm. And I specifically remember Neville and Cesaro playing. And Cesaro, like, he's the best athlete in anything.
Mm. He's very good.
He's like the best.
Neville's the same way.
Neville,
also, naturally
just a
very
natural,
good
great player.
Yeah.
So they're having like a technique. And then I just remember someone yelling and screaming. like shut. That's worse than New Day playing video games. Like, yeah. Shut the up. Yeah, what is going on in there? I go inside and it's you
shirtless at this point because I got so worked up. Dude, but what a story. I mean, if that ping pong game was a wrestling match, wow.
So how did you get everyone on Ho Ho Loon's
side? Just because I was being obnoxious and like he'd get a point on me, I'd make excuses, and then I'd get a point and I would dance around, I'd take off my shirt, I'm sweating, I'm like, you know, I was like Bill Murray and Kingpin, you know, like...
With the hair,
comb over, just flying everywhere.
I was just getting disheveled as the game was going on, but it was a tit for tat game, and it came down to match point. And dude, when he beat me, the pop in the locker room was huge.
I believe at one point
we really got these guys, like, because it was dead center of the locker room,
yeah, right in the middle.
And so all the boys are changing kind of around it. Yeah. And even the ones that weren't paying attention, like, you can't help but get
like me.
Up
I couldn't help it.
It
was so loud. Yeah.
But I believe at one point, a part of your showboating, you scored one on him. And you, I believe you looked at the ball and said, "Give me a little kiss," which I don't know if we can bring this up, but I remember very clearly, and I know exactly where he got that from.
What?
Oh, you remember?
No, from what?
Of all people, you should remember.
Oh, my gosh.
Backstage incident?
Oh, from Lesnar.
Yeah.
Oh, kiss me.
It was a month later.
Is that where you got that from?
I have no recollection of even saying or doing this.
I guarantee we both watched Lesnar when you guys were almost going at it. You look and you go, "Give me a little kiss." Yeah,
kiss me.
It was the exact same thing you said to that ball.
To the ping pong ball.
And it was a month later. I'm like, that's what I'm saying. It's in his head.
I get into a zone where I don't know what I'm saying or what I'm doing.
Oh my
gosh. Just obnoxious. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Oh, geez.
I don't know what I'm doing.
So is that kind of the same attitude that you want to bring to a heel character?
That's right.
It's as close as it gets. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
you know,
God.
I have to tell him tone it down. Actually, I think some people even saw it on TV. Maybe must have been about a month ago or so. During our entrance, he's just bouncing around me, and he came so close to just knocking me over. I had to call. You see me say stop. Before we get in the ring, it's you know. But,
and actually, so here's what happened. Right after that happened, somebody, like a GIF or a meme or whatever, I don't even know, but there was an image of Nelson from The Simpsons walking around like just this bully, and Martin Prince dancing around him, right? And somebody saying,
it's
like,
incredibly accurate.
Somebody saying, it's like Kevin and Sammy. Mm-hmm. And then my friend texted me, and Kevin telling me to comment at that time didn't really sink in with me. But then my friend said, "Dude, the last thing you want to be is the Martin Prince of WWE. And I said, "Oh my God, he's right." I said, "I need to tone it down, but like there's this fine line of run," and I'm learning because it's new to me.
When was the last time you were a heel?
I mean, really, I did an act.
Ever?
Yeah, no, well, like, never, like, I did it for like a couple of tiny shows locally in Quebec that would never see the light of day.
You've never been
just
on
for
main
fun.
Stage,
never, never.
Main
I mean,
deal.
I, n- never. And one time we did a program once or twice, once in IWS and once UWA in Mississauga, where he had kind of
not to be confused with UWA Etobicoke. UWA Ajax.
Where I had turned heel for, let's say, 6 months, but it was just Kevin was being the devil.
Right, he had
gotten in my head, and so I was almost like under his spell for a few months before finally breaking out. But outside of that,
it's hard though to change when you're used to being a baby face for so long or a heel for so long to change the other side.
Big time.
You know?
And this is like first time ever really with something that has to be episodic and has to evolve and has to take... I'm still figuring it out. But the point I'm trying to get at here is I need to figure out the balance because I don't look like Brock Lesnar. I don't look like a killer. So I still need to be taken as a threat. But like the heel that I kind of want to be is real mouthy and blah, blah, blah. But that's like, that's fine. But I still need to be able to be a guy who could like, I want to be able to be a guy that could be in consideration to win the world title. I don't want to just be like a mouthy guy who's just
sure, but that's
there to get backhanded
but,
and that's
but
it.
But you change gears during the match though. But
right, that, right.
As a heel for me even, and not so much for Kevin, but for me, always been the mouthy heel.
Right, or like Sean.
Everyone thinks,
well,
oh,
even
it's
he
Sean.
Was
oh,
back in the day.
Oh, come on, anybody can beat this guy up. Somebody shut him up. Somebody make him quiet. That's a good, that's a heel.
Yeah. That's I just want to win the world title. It's the thing. And I don't want to be a guy that Vince looks at and be like, oh, well, never, we can't.
Well, obviously, as a baby face that was at the time, because you were in a real rut before you turned heel, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
But I really don't know how Vince, maybe I should, but I don't. I don't know how he really views me in that regard. Because I don't even think he would tell me if I just went up to his office and like, Vince, just give it to me straight. All right. I don't think you'll ever be champion. Like, I don't, that's not a talk I want to have.
He would never say that though.
Right. And he would never,
he never
would never say it. So there's no way even of me ever knowing really what he thinks of me. But imagine being told that.
Can we tell the quick story about Vince and his mom?
Sure. Pretty good story.
You heard this
story? No.
So we're in Houston, right? And Vince's mom is there. And she's like, dude, she's what, 94, 95?
Yeah.
She looks great.
She's
she got there
it.
On her own. She walked there on
yeah,
her own
I
or drove
yeah,
there.
I met her, yeah.
Right. So Vince goes, hey, can you my mom's here. Can you meet my mom? So I'm sure. So I was talking to Sammy.
We're waiting. Either you or me, one of us is waiting to talk to Vince. So we're sitting outside like on one of those road cases waiting for, you know, Vince is in there. So I think I'm waiting for him, and then Chris comes, and he's going to wait for him, so we're talking. And then Vince opens the door. He comes out to see his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Gary, you got the story from
well,
here.
Well,
right?
Yeah, I mean, it might be better from your point of view to tell it.
Well, as I remember it, I don't have much of a relationship with Vince to begin with, and especially at this time. Like, we'd had a couple conversations, but not really much. But so Chris sees... you know, Vince, and they go way back, and he gives them a big hug, and they're talking, ha, 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 and they're laughing. Chris goes, hey, happy birthday. Oh, thank you, thank you. I come, I go, oh, yes, happy birthday. And he goes, just gives me the side eye, like, yeah, all right. Just so disinterested. Chris loved it, man.
He's laughing so hard because he feels bad, right? Because he's standing right there. Hey, happy birthday, boss. Oh, thanks. And he's going to say something. He's like,
I have to.
Happy birthday, Vince. I thought in my head, that was introducing him to his mom.
Moments after that, he introduced you to his mom.
But then, did you say hi as well or something?
I said hi to his mom. Yeah. But
I had forgotten the story that it wasn't the mom that jobbed you out. It was him for the happy birthday.
Yeah. That was,
Oh, my goodness. You know, it's funny when they're talking about 2017 and they're playing like all these clips and all this stuff. And they've shown a lot of times the Festival of Friendship. Which, you know, I hadn't seen it. Like, what a great piece of business that was. Like,
yeah,
what
it worked out as good as I don't think it could have worked out better.
Right? I mean,
I don't think there's many promo segments we do that are going to go down like memorable 3 years later.
Right.
I mean, the show always kicks off with some pretty good, you know, good. We've had great interviews, but not, I can't think of a segment that's going to like stay in the consciousness of the fans for next few years the way that one did. That was really good.
Like a this is your life type of a thing.
Right, right.
You know what helped it tremendously is, and it wasn't something that we did, because we played our parts.
The painting.
Really good. Well, no, the painting, all the elements were great. The statue, the painting, you know, We had Chris Scoville helping us, and he was great with everything. And, you know, he understood what we were going for, and we worked at it. We had thought about this for months. Mm-hmm. You had the one, you were dead set on doing it in Vegas with the pageantry and all this stuff. I had the list of KO ID, all this stuff. We just put everything together. But then one piece that we could have never thought of was the way it was shot. Hmm. And Kevin Dunn was in the truck. And when you go, why is my name on this? And you lift the list. You hear I drop my microphone and you hear it, but you don't see me drop it. It's still on you. And as soon as you hear the drop, the camera points to me and I've got this like dead stare in my eyes looking at you. And then they cut back to you and that's it. I pounce.
Right, but
that shot and the sound of the microphone hitting, like those are elements we could have never guessed. I'm like, it's not like it was like, okay, when you say that, that's when I drop the mic and they hear it and then they're going to shoot me.
And then camera one shot. And then camera two.
Yeah. Like, Kevin's the one who was I know Kevin was on that, and I don't know, like, he deserves credit for that part. Like, it was just shot so well. As soon as you said, why is my name on this? So the microphone was just a random thing, but then the shot of my face and then back to you and then just chaos. Man, it was just everything came together. It was just
that's a great point. And it's funny too, because you said we did pitch that. I remember thinking of that. I think that was in February, back like in November or something along those lines.
We talked about it in November.
Then
we talked about it. You know, when we talked about it, we ironed out what we were going to do in February. The afternoon that we were preparing the segment for the highlight reel in Toronto, where we're going to blame each other for the loss of Survivor Series, but then we said
Roman Reigns.
So that's my personal. That's my personal favorite Besides thing of Festival all the things you guys
that's
did.
That's funny. The best thing we've done.
That was my personal favorite.
That's the day we were going through that promo with Chris. And then we started just completely trailing off and talking about when we're going to do the Festival of Friendship. And yeah, we ironed out like all these ideas right then and there.
Right then and there. And it was funny too, because I wanted it to be like a David Lee Roth video in the 80s.
That's exactly what it is.
And turn into Game of Thrones Red Wedding, where it's just like this horrible betrayal that you never saw coming. You're like, no. And
you were in rare form too.
Well,
from the moment you came out,
So you get it, right?
Yeah.
But I remember that.
I remember watching it on the screen. I go, he's just David Lee Roth.
the hat. But I knew that I wanted it to be that way. And I had spoken to Vince about it the week before. And then the week of the Festival of Friendship, he wasn't there. Mm-hmm. Which then, of course, things go awry because everyone then has opinions and starts describing what they want.
And then if you want to just go to him and cut the middleman, it's very hard to get a hold of him.
But I had to, because the idea was they wanted to change it because they said that the KO list of KO was too much comedy, right?
Yeah, I don't know if it was too much comedy or it just wasn't like sudden enough.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's what it was. Yeah, the list of KO was being talked about, just losing that altogether.
Right.
And then me, I believe, just hitting you while you were talking.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a complete shock.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
But you know what? We've seen that a million times.
And that was my point. I love the drama of the... Like, everyone can see it but me. List of KO. Why is my name on this?
You know, there's a few turns that like stick out to people like that. I remember Sean once super kicked. Who did he super kick?
Marty Jannetty.
Clearly stayed in your mind.
No.
There's a few turns that you just can't.
I think
who did he super kick?
And then I thought, and he hits the super kick on.
I don't know what that is. I'm not sure.
Oh, it was when they kicked Booker T out of NWO.
That's right.
I remember it.
On Raw?
You know why? Because I'm a wrestling fan and you're not.
Booker T was in the NWO.
Absolutely.
On Raw?
Oh, yeah.
Sean was in the NWO?
Sean.
What?
Kevin Nash, The Big Show, and Booker T.
And he was trying
Xbox.
He was trying
in
to
WWE?
That was one incarnation of the NWO in WWE.
You got to be kidding me.
I swear. And so,
they did a backstage with Booker where he's clearly laughing. They're all just laughing.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah,
for real?
So yeah. Booker, so I believe what happened is Sean was introduced, like he returned to WWE as a member of the NWO the week before.
Gosh, I forgot about that.
The following week, Booker T, who, you know, already, like,
he was on thin ice.
His storyline was already on thin ice with his NWO brethren. He tries to go talk to Sean, but Sean's in his locker room, and Kevin Nash is reading the newspaper outside of Sean's locker room, making sure that nobody gets in there that they're not supposed to.
He's reading the newspaper.
Booker's like, I want to go talk to HB, the heartbreak kid, and he's making this huge scene.
That was a really good impression.
And Nash is like, nice, not today. And or like he's busy, whatever. So they leave, and yeah, Nash is like openly laughing, and so's Booker T.
They're all laughing in that backstage.
So anyway. And then you know, later there's an in-ring promo where Sean is going like to every NWO member and telling them why the Big Show is crucial to the NWO and why Kevin Nash is crucial. And he goes to Sean Waltman and calls him the greatest worker in the history of the business, I think. Something like really flattering.
Wow.
And then in midst, and then he's like, and once he's done, he's like, and then, you know, I came back last, and boom, he just super kicks Booker out of nowhere. And I think, if I remember correctly, Booker's mic drops just like almost like our thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You hear the sound like, and it like adds to it. But, carry on.
That's what it
I don't
was,
even know why
was.
I brought that up. Just it was a really
there's out of nowhere.
Even
turns.
Though my memory is not great,
there's
I remember
turns that just really stick with right. you, except for when you don't remember what you're talking about. Well,
I don't remember all the particulars. I'm sorry.
But that's what
God.
My point was. I wanted the drama of it,
right?
Not for it not to be.
Everyone
out of
will remember that reveal because that's a different way of doing the turn.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
the turn actually, it's the turn occurs before he actually the physicality ensues. The turn is once you reveal the list of KO, you realize oh he's been. Betrayed.
Yeah.
And that's a very unique way of conveying that betrayal.
My idea was like if you see a horror movie, right? Let's say you're watching that on Friday the 13th, and you open the door and Jason Voorhees is standing there with an axe. Everyone knows you're dead, you know you're dead, and you've got 3 or 4 seconds to think about it, like, oh shit, I'm dead. Boom.
Right.
In comparison to if you're just walking down the street and he cuts your head off from behind.
Blindsides you.
Nothing yeah. ever, you never know.
Right.
And I wanted that moment where everyone in the audience would know. And then also I knew like, no, 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 boom.
You remember with also the first list we got for the list of KO was, so it was an exact copy of yours. So it said the list of KO, but the KO was all fancy.
Yeah, like yeah, calligraphy, person. Yeah.
And I was like, I don't want it. Like,
you can read it.
My block letters,
yeah,
so
yeah,
that
yeah.
it's completely different. Yeah, yeah. You can barely read it. I'm like, I don't think they're going to get it. It looks, it's the list of, what?
Yeah, what? It had to be you know, in your yeah, face.
It, that's yeah. it. It had to be.
Nothing yeah. subtle about that, yeah. you know? It's funny because I look back on that whole year and that whole run, and like it was one of the best things I've done. Like, what a great, you know, it's funny because I haven't seen you guys since, was it July? I think I did that SmackDown thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
now
late
it's
June, early
December.
July, something like that.
But whenever you see guys that you haven't seen for a while, it's like nothing changes.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like old war buddies. But you're still in the job. You guys are in it every week, every mm-hmm. week, every week. I've been gone for a while. So to look back, I can think like, man, that was a great run.
Yeah, you have specific – like the way you're – you know, the last – God, almost the last, what, 10 years that you've had in WWE? Or what, I mean, like, 05 is the first time you took a break.
Yeah, yeah. But most
so
this is 10.
They're intermittent
right.
runs.
Yeah,
of.
That's it. It's like you the way it's divided, you have like clear – like it's almost like chapters in a book. You know what I mean? So you have like clear memories of like each chapter
yeah,
that you
yeah,
came
yeah.
back for. That's,
yeah, because there's a beginning
cool.
and a middle and an end
right.
to
right.
it.
That's it. That's just, which, you tell this story
just,
the whole time you're here.
It's perpetual
you can't, like you
for
said,
us.
You can't remember where you were last night, and I've been there where some say, hey, remember this match that you and, I don't know, you and Regal against, you know, Hunter and Rock. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, no, it was 20 minutes long. Yeah. Like, what? And you watch
happened.
It. Well, I've never seen this before.
Yeah. Right.
You know, but for you guys to just be constantly on that divide.
And you know how that is. You've done it for
absolutely.
Years.
Absolutely.
But actually, it's funny, because going back to your question earlier, of like, hey, did you ever think you guys would be here or whatever? You know, we don't really get a lot of time to stop and because like, even if we were just off for a couple of months, we can stop and reflect on what we've done. Mm-hmm. But because we're in this perpetual 4 days a week on the road every week till the end of time or till your body yeah, breaks down, yeah. whatever comes first,
you lose your mind,
right?
Right.
You know, then we never really have time to reflect and just go, man. Can you believe this?
That's the thing, right?
Because it's always like, what are we doing? Man, I didn't like what we did last week. How can we fix it next week? Or like, what are we doing next week? Oh, okay. You know, you're always looking forward. You're never really looking
well, and
at what
and
you
even,
just did or
like,
the long journey.
And you guys also just worked on Christmas Day, which, you know, I'm sure it wasn't.
So we were lucky enough not because the Rock Crew worked on
okay.
Christmas Day, yeah.
Okay, so the Rock Crew
yeah.
guys did.
Yeah.
And they're saying, well, listen, if you work on Christmas Day, if you're an entertainer, like football players had to play games and basketball players had to play games, sometimes you just got to work on Christmas Day. And I'm like, absolutely. But after that game is done, they go home for the 26th, 27th, 28th, 29th,
right,
whatever.
Right.
We just keep on going. It's not like it's a one-day thing. And even for you guys doing the 26th, it's all the way through to New Year's
tonight,
now, right?
Yeah.
To tonight, you guys
yeah.
get tomorrow off?
Yes.
Okay, but there's a show on Monday. So are most people going home for New Year's or going
so
back and
the
forth?
The Rock Crew has Christmas and New Year's Day.
Right. Yeah.
So
and TV for us is in Orlando, which is where a lot of us are already based to begin with. So we actually kind of lucked out.
Okay.
If you live in Orlando, you've lucked out because now you don't have to fly again for 7 days, mm-hmm. which seems insane. You say that to anyone else. Like,
oh, I know, right?
Oh, my God, I don't get to fly for 7 days.
I know.
I'm so excited.
I know.
I'm so excited.
I know. I just had 2 weeks of not flying, and I'm like so not wanting to fly tomorrow.
Oh,
because
my
once
God.
You get into your mind, it's like boom, 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 boom. But just as we start winding down here, I want to talk about the last time I saw you, you mentioned that you were going to be doing a Hell in the Cell with Shane.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where you guys.
Down. Well, we've been talking how long?
It's been 51 minutes.
Holy moly.
I know you guys got a show tonight.
No,
he's
going
to hear himself all day.
Yeah. Okay, well, I don't know what time.
No, just the time has flown.
You guys aren't curtain jerking tonight? I don't know when you're on the show.
No, we're on later.
Okay, all right, all right.
We're on later. Main event or brother.
Yeah. Yeah, all right, brother.
I'm sorry.
Tell the deal. Tell the deal.
We're Chris Sigler. Yeah. I wish you guys could see it. It's in the shape of a gun.
It's the Jack Lanza cigarette.
I should say first half main event.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, like, yeah, I was just there for your guys' benefit. But let's talk about the Hell in the Cell, because that's kind of, you had a very important spot, Sammy, the whole concept of it. How'd you like working with Shano?
It was it was a real blast.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole time, from the moment he got involved in the AJ angle,
mm-hmm.
which was you know, pretty much
SummerSlam.
From the moment our thing ended, you and I at WrestleMania, and or you know, Payback, whatever.
That was great too.
To SummerSlam, yeah. Payback, and then the rematch, and then you know the three way that happened. Just
yeah.
But so I worked with AJ all summer. And I'm honest enough to say that I don't think we hit it out of the park
mm-hmm.
with that whole angle, and none of our matches really.
Which is it's weird how that happens sometimes. I mean, you and AJ are both so great, and sometimes you just don't have the chemistry. Sometimes
it's crazy,
right?
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, but then Shane got involved and brought like a different element to it. And it's funny because you were in the three way, and the three way was probably the best match AJ and I had of our whole feud.
It was probably the best match you and I had as well. Yeah. The Payback one was pretty good, too.
Payback was really good, I thought.
Yeah.
And even the SmackDown one I really enjoyed, like 2 days later, after Payback. The one that was your
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
but anyway, like when you bring a different element, sometimes that's all it needs, you know what I mean? Like Shane being the referee, I personally wasn't super thrilled with the SummerSlam match because I felt like we actually kind of had to rush through a lot of the stuff we were doing because we had to implement Shane.
It was you and AJ with Shane as the
ref.
Yeah.
Yeah, but a lot of people really enjoyed it, which is all that matters. Vince liked it and the fans liked it and everything. So, you know, but I wish we could have had maybe a bit more time to tell the story of Shane as the referee. That was my only qualm with that match at SummerSlam. But like everything from that point on with Shane, it was really, you know, and obviously Vince getting involved and me doing that thing on SmackDown with him
where I
laid him out. That was that's as big as it gets, really. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the following week, I did something similar with Shane, or 2 weeks later, and then finally it all built to the Hell in a Cell, and you know, the big, you know, shocking turn there that almost drove Sammy insane all day that day.
That was a really stressful day for me.
Well, okay, tell me what was your task for the day? What were you supposed to do?
Well, he had to save my life.
Well, right.
Yeah. Well, not one life. There's three lives essentially on the line.
Right.
There's Shane,
mm-hmm.
obviously.
Mm-hmm.
There's Kevin, if I don't get him off in time. Mm-hmm. And there's me, because if I ruin it, I'm dead.
Well, that's what's the spot? So Shane's going to jump off the cage.
Yeah, and I'm going to pull him off.
Kevin on the table, and you got to pull him off.
This brings me back to, like, we could get into a bit more of a bigger conversation about this subject, about what we do and how ridiculous it is when you look at it from any other medium of entertainment on Earth.
Agreed.
So to me, this is a elite Hollywood level stunt, and they're just kind of like, yeah, just gotta pull him off.
Right.
Well, hang on, like, when
mm-hmm.
when exactly do I pull him off?
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, you'll kind of see Shane's foot just come off. When you see his foot, I go, no, hang on, look, we're talking I have 1.8 seconds to make sure that I go from invisible to grabbing him.
Dude,
and he's lifeless.
Yeah.
You don't understand the margin for error of this.
And that's not even funny. That's a lot of pressure.
Dude, I had knots in my stomach all day. Not only that, but the one or two time I actually like tried pulling him off the table earlier in the day. Like, he's like, just grab me, right? But I grab him and I slip right off.
And something else that didn't help is my back at that time
had been
bothering me a lot. My lower back was a real issue. So even for him to grab me and just me to sit up my lower back would kill me.
Yeah.
So it's not, it wasn't like one smooth motion. It would have to be like, I would almost have to like kind of turn to the side and then sit up. So that added like, you know, just a,
but still, that's a lot.
Hair. Oh, when there's a giant human falling towards you. Yeah.
And his life is on the line. And dude, if you actually watch it back now, if you watch it in slow motion, Shane's body at that velocity comes maybe tops 3 feet away from Kevin's head when he's sitting up.
I think you're overshooting. I'm pretty sure it came within a foot.
No, it was crazy how close it was.
I felt the wind. Like,
so, but that's a crazy spot, though, man. I mean,
it's a crazy spot. It's a crazy stunt that if this was in Hollywood and we're doing this for a movie,
dude,
it would be rehearsed ad nauseum. You would have professionals.
There'd be a giant crash bag.
And for us, it was just like, oh, when you see his foot kind of go.
Wow.
Lives are on the line here, man.
Yeah.
But that was the only part of the stunt that wasn't meticulously. And like the thing is, I don't think there would have been a better way for us to prepare for that part of it. But, you know. There was all those things. There was a giant crash pad. There was, you know, concern look, over was, how Shane was going to go down and where he's going to.
There was a lot of. Yeah, they didn't just wing it. I'm just telling you how I perceived it because I was such a minimal. Yeah.
The only part of that thing that we couldn't really try until we did it was that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no way to because we're not going to ask a human to do it.
Sure.
You know, regardless of who it is.
Throw a bag full of, you know, laundry or whatever.
A 205-pound bag of sand just to measure the timing. You just kind of got to...
I guess we could have tried to throw a bag of clothes and see. But even that, it wouldn't fall exactly as fast.
For some reason, I thought you were going to say, I guess we are the best. Because we just nailed it in one day.
When you think about that, though.
I think that's your catchphrase.
Were you ever on top of on top of the cage?
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty crazy up
there. We fought up there, We took, like, 7 bumps. Yeah.
It's one of those things where you're on the ground looking up. You're like, yeah, no big deal. You get up looking down. It's like, holy
shit. It's wild, man.
No. Oh, yeah. I was on the ground about to pull him off, and I looked up at Shane. And I go, oh, my God, I can't believe he's about to do this.
Yeah.
He is so high in the air.
Yeah,
I couldn't believe it.
Something else.
I remember when I had my Holland Saul against Hunter, it was when the Un-Americans were around, Test and Christian and Lance. Mm-hmm. And I was going to say, like, have him run down, and I'm going to do a cross body off the top of the cage onto the pile.
It sounds amazing until you get up there.
Yeah, and then I get up there, I'm like, F that. No way.
I understand that feeling because that's exactly how I felt the first time I ever did a ladder match. It was you and me versus the Briscoes. So in
those guys are nuts, man.
Yeah. Well, I like to think at that time in our career, we were all pretty crazy. We were all willing to do
whatever
almost anything. It turned out.
Yeah.
First, I would have said everything, but then day of, put that ladder in the middle of the ring, get a few rungs up. I was like, yeah, you can give me the pile driver off the ladder, and I get up there, and it's like you're 5 feet up, but it's super rickety.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I'm not.
The ring is moving.
No. I'm not doing anything off the ladder. You could actually go back and watch all my ladder matches. And Kevin, too. We've had some pretty crazy ladder matches. But if you watch them, it's all falling on ladders, never off.
And I'm the opposite. I don't want to fall on one of those things.
I'd much rather fall on a ladder.
Even when we had that running the bank, you guys were trying to plan some crazy-ass stunts. And I was like, no. Mm-hmm. And you put the apparatus, the Kevin Owens classic apparatus. That was good.
Never works out for me. Every apparatus I build, I go through.
The best part of that was Del Rio on FaceTime the whole time. We were trying to put together the match.
Hey, can you FaceTime over here?
Yeah, please. Hey, you mentioned the Vince thing. Tell me about with the whole headbutt and all that sort of stuff. Because like I said, that's huge. Mm-hmm. At this point in time, with Vince being about 72, whatever he is, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we were all putting him in the walls of Jericho and giving him stunners. But he doesn't do anything like that anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, was that something that you were worried about or just go out there and do it type thing or what?
I really can't remember being worried about it. I was just like, well, we're going to do that. And, you know, it was pretty crazy. Like, we talked earlier in the day and then I'm in the ring. I'm cutting this promo. His music hits. There's Vince McMahon walking down the ramp. I'm like, holy crap. It's like a different animal than being in his office or seeing him in the
back. It's Vince.
Then he gets in the ring. Tells me, you know what words you'd hear if you did that? You're fired. And like 2 inches from my face, which is what I watched on, you know, that it was just a whole surreal experience. And then
to be in the ring with Vince.
Yeah. And then, you know, we shake hands. We put the mics down, which I actually did right now.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah.
And then he starts talking so much shit.
Off mic, sort of.
Oh, yeah. If you could read his lips, I'm legitimately taken aback by it. Where I'm like, Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I literally
tell me one thing that he said.
He was just so many swear words. He's taking it back, cursing like, him out, crap. And then you know, wham, gone. It's the only person I've headbutted as hard was William Regal in NXT.
Mm.
I can't compare it. Like, it was just, you know, it's not like, I'll tell you this much. Nobody can accuse me of taking it easy on the boss.
That's for damn sure, man.
And then, you know, everything else besides the headbutt.
Hey, but what about looking down and seeing that you busted him open hard way? Like, that's
surreal. Yeah, and then the blood came and just everything, even the super kick and the, I don't know. There, like, even the thing where he stands back up and he looks at me before, like, after the headbutt and just the blood stripping down. Yeah. And, you know, he's like, he's seething and he tries to come at me. It's just the whole thing was just so surreal. Yeah, it was just, man, it's, I'll never forget it.
Do you obviously feel like it puts you on a different level at that point?
So, yeah, you know, I feel like it how could it not?
Mm-hmm. It's funny because it wasn't more than a few months earlier that he was really angry with you.
Mad. He wasn't pleased with me and the way things were going and the way I was you know, I was working and the way I was portraying myself. You know, it's not what he needed from me. Mm. And once he made that clear, I did every effort, everything I could to give him what he wanted. And I think I succeeded in that. And I think that's why he was willing to do that for me. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, you know, obviously he was trying to, you know, bring some buzz to the Hell in a Cell with Shane. But, you know, I don't think he would have necessarily done that with me if he didn't feel like I one, could use it deserved it. But yeah. If he didn't think I was on the right track, I don't think he would have put himself in that
position. Right, exactly.
Because like you said, you know, back in the day, he was taking moves left and right, mm-hmm. you know, 10 years ago. Last thing he did, of in-ring physicality before that, I think, was with Roman maybe 2 years before or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I forgot about that. He took a Superman punch off the apron.
Yeah, he took a Superman punch. But, it's...
But that was still part of like
a match
and a series of, oh, and then this and then that. And oh my God, Vince gets punched. Oh,
and there's
my
a
God.
Difference between taking a bump off the apron, which, you know, you could do if you're a first year valet.
Was like visceral, gutter, like,
well, especially
it was emotional.
It was just after that Shibata headbutt from New Japan that he's done. He'll never work again.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't even aware of that because I don't watch, you know, I'm in my WWE bubble. I don't really watch anything else, and I don't follow Japanese wrestling or anything like that. But I heard about it later because once I headbutted Vince, obviously, that's when, like, people came out of the woodworks. Like, well, would you believe Vince would do that after Shibata? Like, I'm like, I don't even know what the hell they're talking about. And then I started looking into it. But, yeah, I mean, look, you know, these things happen, unfortunately, and this guy was doing it. From what I understand, Shibata was almost like a trademark of his.
Lots of headbutts.
As hard as he could.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really unfortunate, and hopefully everything works out for him. But, you know, it's not like we're going to do this ever again.
You know what I mean?
You don't go around
headbutting.
Vince took
a calculated risk. And, you know, ultimately it's his company.
Mm-hmm.
So if he wants to take a headbutt, he'll take a headbutt.
And if you go light on him too, you're going to be in big trouble.
Oh, yeah. And I'm pretty sure that's why he talks so much shit. Like, he wanted to make sure I was going to...
That's a good point, man.
Yeah,
that's a good point. That's the master manipulation.
Yeah, so people ask me later, hey, what was he saying when the mics were down? Was he telling you to make sure you get him good? I'm like, in a way, but none of those words.
None of those words.
Do you remember when Shane showed up for the first time in Detroit and Vince was yelling at him? He was like, I'll f*** you up.
And it
was like, he said it on Raw.
Couldn't believe my ears.
I was like, what?
Yeah.
I can't believe the boss
would not believe
just said the F word on Raw. It's great.
No, who's going to tell him anything?
Oh,
I know.
And afterwards, he's like, oh my God, I felt so terrible.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, I had when I was first doing my coming out, it was the big, it was the 1-2 punch where I beat Hunter for the title in State College, Pennsylvania, and then they took it away from me. And then the next night, I beat Rock in a lumberjack match. In Philly, crowd was super. I was like my big 1-2 punch and finally getting to the next level. And afterwards, back in those days, you would grab the mic and talk to the crowd for 10, 15, 20 minutes. Austin Rock would do that all the time. So I'm like, well, I got to grab the mic. It's the end of the show. I'm the big babyface winner.
I'm happy.
So I did a big promo putting over Philly, how much I love Philly. And I was like, you know, you guys are the fucking greatest crowd of all time. And I'm like, oh no. And I look over at Lawler, like, did I really say that? And Lawler's like, oh yeah. I was like, oh no. So I walk through the curtain, and Vince is standing there with his hand out to me to shake my hand. He was so proud of me, right? Because it was two in a row. I finally lived up to my potential. And I shook his hand. I'm like, oh, I can't believe I said that. And he's like, what did you say? With this big smile.
Oh,
I'm like, oh, you didn't hear it? He's like, what did you say? I'm like, oh, nothing. What did you say? And I told him what I said. He's like, and they just, I said, yeah, I told the crowd they're the best effing crowd of all time. And he's like, damn it, Chris. And just walked out.
Oh, God.
I actually had a very similar moment with Vince, but it was on the phone. And it wasn't in a promo. I swore on TV because I got hurt. And it shocked me. I got hit with something.
Reactionary.
And, oh, yeah. I just let an F word slip, and they caught it.
Oof.
Yeah. So when I came back, it's like, hey, we caught that F word. And it's like Zach was, I'm like, I'm really sorry. He goes, hey, you're going to have to learn, damn it. I'm like, oh, boy. Yes, sir.
It was Mr. McMahon for a second there.
Yeah. So have you had any further interactions with him, Sammy, now that you're a heel and kind of in the mix?
No. And I really look, it's part of it's on me because I feel like I should be cultivating that relationship with him. It's not like, it's not kissing up to the boss. It's, you want to try to understand him and you want to have a relationship with him so he can guide you.
Right.
You know what I mean? And like, let's be frank. I mean, he kind of created all this. You kind of, any insight you could get from him would be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the one takeaway was just when I talked, I actually did Edge and Christian, Adam and Jay's podcast.
Do you do those over the phone or do they do them in
close
person?
Personal friends. I did mine over the phone.
I did mine over the phone, okay, as well. Gotcha. And actually, just a funny little side
note. Amateurs.
So I go, hello. Like the phone rings. I go, hello. They're like, hello, hello. And we're already on the podcast, but I thought, you know, oh, hello. Okay, so we're going to get started. You ready? You cool? But I answer hello, and that's the start of the podcast. So that threw me for a loop, but neither here nor there. But so we discussed this a little bit where the direction, he didn't like give me a very, very clear direction, but it was very different from what I had in my head. Because to me, Sami Zayn's always been the good guy who always does the right thing, fights the odds no matter what, yada, yada. And then now, you know, he's finally been broken, and it's because of you people, and there's like this big chip on his shoulder. But so I didn't have this big in-depth conversation with him, but he just goes to me, hey, you smile out there. And I'm thinking, what? And like, not just, but the head writer and like Ryan is like, hey, yeah, Vince insists, like, bring the hat and you're dancing and you're doing, I'm like, what? What is he talking about? What do you mean?
Because he thinks it's annoying. That's why.
So we pieced that together a couple of weeks later.
I got it. I was
one of the writers. No. This is just our theory. It's just funny that your mind went there. Yeah. It's funny that your mind went there so quickly, probably because you know Vince.
Yeah.
But I only started piecing that together a couple weeks in. Like, wait a minute. He thinks the way I've always been acting, to him, that's really aggravating probably. So he's like, don't change a thing. But I think his way of thinking of it is more, no, life has never been better.
Mm-hmm.
Now you don't have the pressure of the world and you're trying to be good and whatever. Like, you don't care about what they think about you anymore. So it's not a 180 degree departure from who you were. You're more yourself than ever.
Mm.
But now it means something different when you smile. It used to be when you smile, it's like, oh, lovable. But now when you smile, it's like, God, it pisses you off because, you know, because now he's bad.
Right.
It just means the context is totally different.
Yeah.
Now. It means something different. But again, like, it's nothing I would have thought of on my own. But the second I did it, I was like, oh, my God. Of course.
Mm-hmm.
So much better than if I come out there and I have, like, black eyeliner and I'm all emo Sammy now. Like, you guys.
Samuel.
Samuel Zane. You, you know?
I would love to see that, though.
Samuel Zane.
The little sample we just got.
You guys listening did not see.
I really wish you guys would have seen the little head tilt.
It was great, yeah.
And I tucked some imaginary,
you did, some imaginary
hair behind my ear.
You got a little you got a buzz cut.
Long flowy locks. Whipped imaginary bangs away from my eyes.
Oh, you guys got a show coming up. 7,000 tickets sold, which is a good house. Good house, brother. last question. What's your favorite match that you remember watching before you got in the business, since you're a wrestling fanatic?
Before you started wrestling.
Favorite
match as a fan.
As a fan.
Well, I mean,
We're still fans, but...
So yeah. I was already wrestling, but I was only 2 years in, and I wasn't wrestling on a regular basis because the first 3 years of my career were literally just... I'd wrestle once every 3-4 months, and, you know, in the big arena, and I'd have to practice my match like 3 times a week, so I'd know it by heart, the Jacques Rougeau way, I call it. But it's an answer that surprises a lot of people, but it's one of my favorite matches of all time because when I watched it live, it was on pay-per-view, Survivor Series, The Garden in 2002, it blew my mind. It's Brock Lesnar versus The Big Show. It's the one where Heyman turns on Brock.
Oh,
man, that match, just the way Lesnar was throwing Big Show around, you know, because I was such a worker back then, just the bumps that show was taking for a guy his size. And then the turn, it was 10 minutes of just fun and, man,
no, but
what a
let's
match.
Let's go earlier that. Than wow. that, because at least at this point, you're enough of a worker to, like, to recognize Big Show's bumps that added to your enjoyment. So let's go even earlier.
Oh, but I always – I had that from before when I started wrestling in 2000. But in 1998, I was such an avid fan that I still could appreciate – Man,
you knew
Shawn
what a bump
Michaels
was, yeah.
takes things really
yo,
crazy.
Neither here nor there, but let's just go
did
back
to... Did you just say yo?
I said, did I say
I
yo?
Think, I think he said no. It's like when Cesaro went, hey, Sammy, can I say something? He goes,
I'm,
no.
I'm almost certain he
you
said...
You love that story.
I'm almost
story.
Certain he said yo.
That was, yeah,
I do say yo sometimes.
Yeah, okay.
So maybe I yo'd him. Right. I don't know. We'll have to rewind the tape.
Jimmy Jacobs and...
yeah.
Rewind the tape.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, yeah.
He just talks like Jimmy.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. True.
Yeah, yeah.
Even that, like, I've done
it. Just gotta feel it. Yeah, yeah, come on.
Or if you're like, how are things? Good, good,
good.
Good. Good. If it's
good.
Fine, good.
Good, good, good.
Yeah,
that high pitch.
And that was a pretty good match we had. It was a match. It was fine. It was a match.
Anyway, are you gonna go off on your tangent that you cut me off for? Or just, you don't remember, do you?
I do, but it was really. I really did cut you off pretty bad because
that's
not
the
about
Sammy
me.
Way.
Hey, yeah. Hey, Sammy, can I say something? No. Anyways,
I was gonna go back to Survivor Series '96 for a
second.
He
keeps shying away.
And I was gonna say,
one.
Man, we watched Mankind versus The Undertaker '96. Man, Mick could move.
Oh, Mick was great.
Damn, man.
You know, it's funny.
I couldn't believe
when
it.
When you see, like, Mick now, or like even like watch any Dean Malenko match. We know Dean now.
Yeah.
Watch Dean in, like, 96, 95. That guy was amazing.
Dude.
Amazing performer.
Like, I remember, like, I was in love with Mick in 97, 98, 99. But you watch him in, like, 96 when he's Mankind that first year. Man, his movement is incredible.
Yeah, he's rolling, man. He's what's yours when you're a fan?
I guess the first, like,
do you even know?
First thing that came to my mind when you asked.
He didn't watch wrestling until 2007, so there's no point in asking.
Dude, my earliest memories are watching Hogan, all right?
Arthur Calamitis didn't let him watch, what's his name again?
Arthur Calamitis.
Oh, is that right? I got it right. Holy shit.
You were dead on.
Oh, my God.
No, so one of the first ones that comes to my mind is Bret and Steve Austin at WrestleMania 13.
Double turn classic, yeah.
Just because, to me, that was like a level of sophistication of storytelling that was beyond my comprehension at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe the emotions they were making me feel. And I remember showing it to another kid that I grew up with, Stefan Sheba. Not a big wrestling fan, but I just grew up with him. And he wasn't really a wrestling fan, but he was watching this match. And going into the match, if you're Canadian and you're 11 years old, you love Bret Hart. But then he's watching this match. He's like, man, I hate Bret. I love Steve Austin. And I took this as betrayal, but I kind of... Part of me was like, yeah, me too, because of what they were doing.
They were selling it, yeah.
I just couldn't believe how they manipulated emotion in a way
it was
I've never seen.
Classic double turn.
But I didn't even know I'd never seen a double turn like
you
that.
You didn't know that you wanted that you would accept Bret as a heel until he did it, and you didn't know that you wanted Steve as a babyface until they did it. I was the same.
Well, but at the same time, I was such a devoted little Bret Hart fan that I was like not – I was like denying these feelings. So it was all a whirlwind of things.
Right.
Even then, I don't think I've ever seen, and probably still haven't seen, a double turn like that done through the execution of a match.
Yeah.
Through a 25-minute process like that.
I don't think you can do that.
It was so masterful. Yeah, like even talking about it now, I can't even believe it.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing that comes to mind, I guess.
I got one.
Actually, Edge and Christian in the Hardys, first ladder
matches.
Match.
Yeah.
That kind of, I was like, whoa.
I always say Savage and Steamboat. That's the classic. But there's another really great match, Rockers versus Orient Express from SummerSlam 1990. Which was right before I had my first match. But Orient Express were really good with the Rockers, Pat Tanaka and Paul Diamond. If you guys are ever looking for something to watch that's good from those days.
What year is this?
1990, SummerSlam. Rockers versus Orient Express.
Is that Rick Rude and Ultimate Warrior in the cage?
I'm not sure what the rest of the matches were. I don't remember.
The main event?
Yeah, I don't know. Who you guys wrestling tonight?
We're in a 6-man tag team match. Our partner is... The Lone Wolf, Baron Corbin.
Oh,
which happens to be in a 6-man.
That's not the so amazing lone, irony, yeah.
Against
their tag team partner, the Lone Wolf,
against the artist known as Shinsuke Nakamura.
Uh-huh.
Glorious
Bobby Roode and the Viper, Randy Orton.
Okay, house show. I'm not going to put my money on you guys. I say Orton takes it on.
Well, I take great offense to that, sir.
Orton takes on
everything I can.
Okay,
to prove
me wrong. Orton takes on Sammy. That's my prediction. Guys.
Well, look, it's exactly what's happened the last three nights, but tonight it ain't going
down. I got a good feeling about Tampa.
You're close to home, baby. You're close
Tampa,
to Orlando.
All right.
I am. Thanks again to Sammy and Kevin. Always a good time when I get to sit down with them. Great guests. Great guys and a great time. And speaking of great time, there's still cabins available for Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. We set sail October 27th. I got to tell you, we had the biggest week ever in sales over the last few days on the Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com and put down your deposit for as low as $150. But you got to hurry because those cabins are filling up huge. We are on a roll, baby. We are, I'm really, really excited about the sales that we've had over the last few days. And just to see how people are still completely getting into the idea of this cruise and the amount of fun they're going to have. And remember, everything is all inclusive on the cruise. Every activity that you hear about, every name that you see on the list, no pun intended, will be on the cruise. And you can meet them and greet them, get an autograph, get a picture free. You can see the Sea of Honor tournament free. You can see a Fozzy concert. You can see a Jim Brewer comedy show. You can see a live Keep It at 100 podcast. All of the activities are all inclusive with your cabin reservation. And here's some of the top names involved. Jim Ross, Jerry the King Lawler, SoCal Val, Mick Foley, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Rey Mysterio, the Keep It at 100 crew, Conan, Disco Inferno, and Shane Helms. Beyond the Darkness, Tim and Dave will be scaring the pants off of you with live scary tale stories. Colt Cabana and Marty DeRosa doing the unprofessional wrestling show. That's hilarious. Don Callis and Paul Lazenby doing Killing the Town. Brad Williams, Ron Funches, Jim Brewer doing some of the most funny comedy you're going to see in America. Jim's band, The Loud and Rowdy, is amazing. They're going to be rocking. Busted Open, Dave LaGreca is going to be there. Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons, the new album comes out in January. Fozzy, Painless comes out on the video for Painless comes out in just a few weeks. Stay tuned right here for more info. King will be there. The Stir, Dave Spivak Project, Spiwi, you've heard him right here on Talk Is Jericho, debuted his song Get Out of My House. Go check out the video on YouTube now. It's amazing. The Darlings of Rock and Roll, the Cherry Bombs will be there. Shoot to Thrill, the world's best female AC/DC cover band. Blizzard of Ozzy, the world's best Ozzy Osbourne cover band. And of course, the pièce de résistance, the Ring of Honor, presenting the Sea of Honor tournament aboard the ship. Matches happening in the middle of the ocean on a ring that is tethered to the deck. And the winner of the Sea of Honor tournament gets a Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship shot in the future. The Young Bucks will be there. The Villain, Marty Scurll, the Briscoe Brothers, Dalton Castle, Frankie Kazarian, Adam Page, the American Nightmare, Cody, don't call him Rhodes, his beautiful wife, Brandi Rhodes, will be there, and we're announcing more big names in the upcoming weeks. We're still rolling, man. We're not finished giving you more talent, more superstars, more star power, and more fun on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. Book your cabin now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com, and don't forget to check out the second season of But I'm Chris Jericho at ButI'mChrisJericho.com. If you're looking for something funny, that's a great comedy that I did. 5 minute, 8 minute episodes. Go check it out. But I'm ChrisJericho.com. Do that for me, please. We'll see you soon on the Fozzy Rock Tour. And in the meantime and in between time on Friday, it's True Crime. That's right. We got True Crime Tales with Dave Schrader from Beyond the Darkness. They've got another podcast called True Crime. And he's going to tell us some of all of the crazy and wacky and incredible stories that have happened over the years in the crime world. So Dave Schrader will be here, True Crime, on Friday. In the meantime, and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy!